97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hey everyone, welcome in. It's the Tuesday Speak Up Table coming to you. My name is Barbara and I am so glad that you are with us today because you're in for an interesting discussion and ideas for you to take home and think about and talk over. My guest today is James Payne. He's here to talk about his latest book, The Big Government We Love to Hate. And we have a lot of areas to get into. Many of you already know Jim, a Sandpoint resident who's the author of 22 books and who brings to us a lifetime of experience in studying and teaching political science. Jim's been a professor at Yale University, Johns Hopkins, Texas A&M. So we have a lot to talk about in this newest of his books. So stay with us today because the professor is in the studio. Live stream the program right now at NorthIdahoRadio.com, and we'll be right back with James Payne.
Summer is in full swing at the Pondere Winery, and July marks the month huckleberries begin coming into season in the mountains. So naturally, we've decided to make our popular Huckleberry Blush Wine of the Month. Come enjoy a glass while taking in beautiful works of art by Dan Carpenter and Denise Knight on display for Art Walk. Our kitchen continues to turn out incredibly tasty cuisine that complements all of our award-winning wines. We're open Tuesday through Sunday, 12 to 8, so come into 301 Cedar in downtown Sandpoint and treat yourself to an experience unlike any other at the Pondere Winery.
Happy Draw Day, Idaho. Today and every day, you can play for amazing cash draws. With Lucky for Life, play for thousands daily and a grand prize to win 365 grand a year for life. Talk about a lucky streak. And with Idaho Cash, it's all about play and adventure. The jackpot starts at 20 grand daily. Get two plays for a buck. How high can you climb that mountain of cash? Idaho Cash and Lucky for Life, now with daily draws. Proof that luck doesn't take the day off. Play today. Woo! Benefiting Idaho Public Schools and Buildings. Playwise.
Everyone has something they've dreamed about doing but never quite had the time or money to make happen. Like skydiving naked, becoming a butterfly therapist, or an Olympic breakdancer. Well, now with the life-changing $200,000 Carefree Cash Payday at Northern Quest, you could live that dream. Or just pay down the mortgage. Either way, I know what I'd do. Hit it, Gary. See details at northernquest.com. We've all had something we dreamed about doing but never quite had the time to accomplish. Like competitive duck herding, human puppeteering, or exotic balloon animal art. Well, now with Northern Quest's life-changing $200,000 Carefree Cash Payday, you can live just about any dream you dream up. Or finally move out of your mom's basement. That's your call. But I know what I'd do. Come on, fellas, let's beat it. See details at northernquest.com.
If you served honorably in our nation's armed forces and you're looking for a way to continue serving your fellow veterans and your community, then join AMVETS. Each year, AMVETS members volunteer millions of hours at VA healthcare facilities from coast to coast, helping to improve the lives of their fellow veterans through the VA Voluntary Services Program. AMVETS posts and departments also participate in a wide variety of community service projects, ranging from Americanism in our schools to supporting the Special Olympics and Boy Scouts of America. Even if you no longer wear the uniform today, you can still serve through the AMVETS by joining today at AMVETS.com.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back in. Join me in saying hello and welcome to Jim Payne. Jim, thanks for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
And I need to say be with us again because I think this is your fourth trip through here.
My goodness.
I know. I love your books. I love your books. I want to let you folks know a little bit more about Jim. He's a social scientist. He writes on political science, economics, foreign policy, political philosophy. philosophy, and he received his doctoral degree from UC Berkeley, and he has taught, as I mentioned earlier on, at Texas A&M, as well as Yale, Johns Hopkins. And after teaching poli-sci and other courses for 20 years, he decided to leave the academic field and become an independent researcher and an independent writer on his own. And today we're talking about how, you know, it's a serious book. All of his books are serious. Well, the kayaking books also, Jim, are serious too, because they're just seriously interesting, aren't they?
Well, thank you.
Yes. All right. The book we're talking about today, The Big Government We Love to Hate. I want to, there's an overview in your book that I enjoyed and I read several times. So is there a way that you can begin to summarize this overview for our audience so they can kind of grasp our larger topic?
Right. Well, it helps if we go to the subtitle, which is Exploring the Roots of Political Malaise. And what I'm observing is that in recent times, and we can go back and talk some more about this, but in about the last 30 years, a new type of disenchantment with government has emerged. And the basic characteristic of it is that, on the one hand, people have lost their confidence in government as a problem-solving agency. But the strange contradiction is that they still want more of it. So that's why we're getting to sort of this love-hate relationship. It's almost like a codependence that I'm trying to grapple with. And that's what the book tries to explain.
It's so easily summarized like that in a way, but it is very confounding and it's very strange because I find myself falling into the same patterns. And one of the things you talk about, Jim, is that these patterns have existed for centuries. This is not something that's unique to, you know, the 21st or even the 20th century. It goes back, doesn't it?
Well, the basic faith in government as society's problem-solving agency, the confidence that government can take care of anything we can think of, goes all the way back to the beginning. And you'll find it in the Psalms, 1000 B.C., so forth. Plato absorbed this 100%, never questioned it, so forth. So it's all the way back that this faith in government is part of the culture. But what has happened in, say, until I find about 1991 is where the first book I found. A whole slew of books started coming out, which said the two things at once. They said government fails, it's not very smart, it does contradictory things. But then you expect the writer to say, therefore we should be turning away from it, because that's the logical thing. If you go to a restaurant and you get bad food, you say, oh, okay, I'm not going back there. But that is not what happens with government. And even those writers, who they have very severe words criticizing government, but they want more government programs. There isn't a single program that they suggest should be even cut back. So it's, I say, it's the love-hate thing. I called it failurism, and I've been writing about it for quite a few years, and first wrote about it 7 or 8 years ago. It is the title of the article was Government Fails, Long Live Government.
Exactly. You know, one of the things is you talked about all the criticism, and more recently, since maybe 1990, government, though it may criticize itself, it always comes up, the solution is always more government, more money, bigger programs. So they are their own self-perpetuating promiser for more. It's going to be that, yeah, you're right, that didn't work out as well, but here's the solution now that we've got.
Right.
And we get sucked in to those promises or that idea that this time it will work.
Well, I've looked at this situation for many years, and I finally decided the best way to understand it is to suggest that there is a deep, unexamined faith in government. And I believe this starts, children will have this. Children will have this faith in government before they even know what government is. I remember asking my daughter, Ellen, when she first at about age five, I could see she understood the concept of money. She knew what quarters and nickels were, but I saw her use a phrase in which she understood money, so I immediately gave her a political question. I said, Ellen, should government give money to poor people who don't have any? And she thought real hard. You almost smoke coming out of her ears because, you know, we're pulling her way ahead of her understanding. And then finally she hit it. She said, yes, because he has $1,000. Mm-hmm. She was applying her principle of sharing and so forth, helping others, to this thing she knew nothing about, but had confidence that this could take care of the problem.
Yeah.
So this faith, I call it a cultural presumption, this faith that government has the answers is deeper than any specific rational conclusion, so that it's not like a restaurant. You can walk out and say, I'm not coming back there again. It's like you had some kind of faith in your bones in that restaurant. That's beyond rational criticism. You can't overturn it, at least not quickly.
You know, you have a graph in your book that speaks to this issue of declining faith and trust in government. And yet, as you say, we carry on. And the dive from, let me see, from like 1960s, it looks like where the trend line starts, we're just under 80%. Were pretty, you know, trusting in government. They felt pretty good about what was going on in 1960. Of course, the 60s hadn't happened yet, in Vietnam yet. But then the trend line, Jim, is just all the way down to below 20% on this, and that's 2015. So that's already, you know, six
right.
years ago. It's below
right.
20%. And as you say, yet we persist.
Yeah. The question, the poll question is, do you generally trust the government in Washington to do the right thing?
Right.
And the proportion answering always or most of the time, that's what's plotted here. And yeah, it was first asked in the late 50s. Gallup did it in 58 and got over 80% saying always or most of the time. And that has fallen down to less than 20%
dramatically. So you said federal government. So this is applicable primarily to federal government. There's a little more trust and faith in state and a little bit more in local, or is that degrading on its own also?
I think it parallels it. I think it parallels it.
Yeah.
That these large centralized institutions that we, I'd say, have this basic gut feeling that it can take care of anything we can think of,
mm-hmm.
that faith is starting. But I say, for most people, they want the next program, whatever it is.
Right.
A tiny...
Especially if they're going to be one of the recipients, I mean, the direct recipient.
Yes, but I think it's more like helping the poor. Most people, it's not their recipients. It's just
right.
that...
Help the poor, like, help the children.
Minimum wage is a beautiful example of this. The people that support minimum wage, which is, by the way, over a majority do... it's not, they're not in it for themselves or anything. It's they just say, hey, that sounds good.
Right.
You know, but they have faith that government will reach in to all these thousands of employment situations and do the right thing. If you actually start looking in the employment situations, find out who are the workers and why are they there and why are they being paid this and that and so forth, you find it's enormously complex. And just passing some overall rule about it does more harm than good.
Always does more harm than good. almost always.
I think so. And that's, by the way, I've got to tell you, as I was a graduate student, political science, came out of Berkeley. I was an LBJ liberal.
Mm-hmm.
This is back before you were born and so forth, but in the 60s with the Great Society and stuff. And I thought government, yeah, its programs to help the poor and so forth, this is a fine idea. And I was a political scientist. And then bit by bit, year by year, I would study one program after another and find the dysfunctions in them and how they didn't work the way you thought at first they would work. Until I finally, this would be about age 45 or so, was walking down the hall and say, you know, the only successful government program is the one that hasn't been studied carefully.
Right. It just looks successful.
Yeah, well, everything's – well, again, it goes back to the faith. You say, government, please help poor people. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And you assume that there's a wisdom and care and all going on here. And that assumption is not
– is not true.
Justified.
You know, it just seems like on one hand you know, people don't want to get involved. They got their own life going on. They got their own kids. They're trying to solve their own problems. So it's like, give it up to the government. And the other part of that, a little bit more generous and a little bit more gracious, is we are essentially overwhelmed by these huge issues that are happening. And we don't know what to do or how to respond. And so there is just a default to the government and to others. One of the examples, and I thought of so many as I was reading your book, and I'd like you to comment on it, is I watched a documentary on homelessness. There's billions of dollars spent at every level on homelessness, and it's worse now than it's ever been. And more children and more families and more women. And no, it's not just addiction and mental illness. It's money, it's depression, it's everything. That to me is an example. I mean, government in no way has solved the homeless issue in America.
Well, right. In fact, even to speak of it as an issue almost oversimplifies it.
Yes.
But the feeling that there ought to be a solution is something we hear about, I think, is one of the many impulses that leads us to turn to government. There ought to be somebody. By the way, it parallels the way, you know, the ancient peoples had gods, rain gods and stuff. You believe the rain god brought rain, and you'd pray and you'd sacrifice children on the altar and so forth, and maybe the drought would continue. But that didn't lead you to say, oh, well, I guess Talak really doesn't work. You see, you came back the next year and the next year. And that's kind of what's happening with the government thing. But to take the homeless thing or any of these large problems, it's where you really have to start with is humility. Mm. And as you're saying it, is we really don't know. It's too big for us to grapple. And if we went down, and which I did a book on welfare, and I spent a whole year going around the country and meeting welfare recipients and sitting down on benches with beggars and asking them about their lives and stuff. And you discover this is a very, in just one person, a very complex, deep thing. And what to do about that one person to fix his problem is extremely challenging.
Well, we're going to get later on in the program, later on in your book, to some of the solutions that you have. And in this documentary on homelessness, there were two, quote-unquote, programs that were – why were they working? Because one homeless woman who herself was homeless organized a few of the homeless people around her, and they developed their own little community, and they just helped each other. They did things for each other, and pretty soon they got a few things, and they started feeling more hopeful and more. I mean, they're still homeless, but they're more happy homeless. I mean, they have a little community. And there was another one in Hawaii where a businessman decided on his own and some of his buddies, they would just build some little tiny, tiny houses, and they would be off the grid. They would do their own thing. They would not involve government. And they're just expanding like crazy with these little tiny 400-foot places. And so that's going to be, I know, one of the solutions is volunteer, you know, this local effort that happens when we really can, even though we feel overwhelmed, we really can, can't we, Jim?
Well, a corner of it. You can't solve a whole millions.
Your little area.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's the thing. And by the way, Habitat for Humanity in this town is an example. I was one of the founders of that back in, I think it was around 1990.
Yes.
And by the way, the one thing, and here's where government is kind of bad on this, in any of these specific programs to help a specific group, you have to have kind of rules and limits, and it will have to exclude someone.
Mm-hmm.
If someone comes stumbling into your shelter drunk and smashing, you have to, sorry, you can't come in here. Okay, and this businessman you're talking about with the and Habitat, we had family selection committees and all this stuff. So you always have to have a certain amount of discrimination. It's very difficult for government to apply this kind of discrimination. It
right.
dumps the money to everybody and ends up aggravating various kinds
everybody.
Of misfunctions.
Yeah. Well, you have a chapter that I was very intrigued by, Jim, and it was about the use of force. And I think that's kind of the segue from you can't discriminate against everybody and we need rules, and how government uses force and what you had to say about that. It was very interesting. So everybody, stick with us. We have a lot more of interesting things to cover. We'll be right back.
Have you visited Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grünberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
Now is the time to gear up and get those projects taken care of. Let Thick and Thin Beams of Bonner's Ferry, your hometown sawmill, help you spruce up your home with new flooring, a decorative mantel, desktop, or beams up to 44 feet long. Just about anything you can dream up, the guys at TNT can help design. Be sure to check with Thick and Thin Lumber first for all your wood product needs. For fast, reliable service and competitive pricing, stop by the mill at 4355 Cow Creek Road or check out their website, tntbeams.com.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
They're back and rocking the chutes open in 2021. The PRCA presents the 72nd anniversary of the Newport Rodeo in Newport, Washington. Friday, June 25th and Saturday, June 26th, starting at 7:30 both nights. Bring your friends and family to the Newport Winkler Arena for one of the best rodeos in the area. Enjoy all the classic events, including saddle bronc riding, barrel racing, and, of course, the heart-pounding excitement of bull riding. Saturday the 26th, the parade starts at 11 a.m. Then at 7:30, it's Tough Enough to Wear Pink Night, brought to you by Because There Is Hope House of Spokane. They have a full beer and spirits garden, over 100 of your favorite vendors, live music, and so much more. The Newport Rodeo's 72nd anniversary is a must-see for the whole family. Tickets are $18 for adults and $8 for kids. Available online now at newportrodeo.com. The Newport Rodeo is sponsored in part by K102 Country and the Newport Hotel Motel Tax.
A lot of things feel out of control these days, so it's time you pick your battles. Skip playing referee in the morning. Skip laundry this week. Skip game limits today. Skip cooking tonight. New realities require new routines, and it's okay to skip some of the old ones. But don't skip your preteen's well visits and recommended and catch-up vaccinations. A public service announcement from Vaccinate Your Family in collaboration with Merck.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Hey, everyone. We have got it going on here today for you with Jim Payne. He is the author of the book, The Big Government We Love the Hate. And before we jump back into that, I want to remind you that this wonderful walking program is in operation in Sandpoint. Walk with the Doc, which is not dog. It's doc as in doctor or healthcare professional, every Thursday at 1 o'clock at Traverse Park. It's interesting. It's fun. You can walk faster. You can walk slower. And you can ask questions. And it's tons of fun. So that's Thursdays at 1 o'clock at Traverse Park. And I also want to let you know we're going to have some special walks on Saturday. And our first special walk, Saturday, August the 7th, is with cardiologist Dr. Jenkins. So if you've got some questions about heart health at any age for anything going on, we're going to grill. We get to walk with and grill in the most friendly way, Dr. Jenkins, local cardiologist. All right, that's Walk with the Doc. All right, Jim, welcome back in. There's a whole chapter here, how government uses force. And I was fascinated, and to be honest, I didn't really get it. So give us a lecture on how. Yes. What is this?
Yes, it's a very difficult issue from various points of view. But you have to go back and seek a definition of government. I mean, down through the ages, we're talking thousands of years, people have looked to government to solve problems. But surprisingly, no one has asked, what is government? What's the definition of it? It turns out, if you finally pick this apart, the answer is pretty simple. Government is the organization that manages the agencies of physical force, policemen and soldiers. That's what it is. We don't like to say this now. We don't like to hear it now because, as I wrote in this other book on the history of force, in relatively modern times, the last 100, 150 years, we are realizing force is a very unhealthy way of trying to control things. And so, like war, it used to be war was glorified. Hey, we're going to war. Wonderful. And so forth. We're moving, turning against that. So there's a big historical trend against force. So people don't like to talk about force. They don't like to bring it up. And they certainly don't want to hear that the government that they love and depend on and so forth is based on force. But you've got to do that if you're going to analyze whether government is going to be an effective, rational, responsible, problem-solving agency. You have to ask, is using force a healthy way to approach problems? And I think today most people will say, no, of course not. Like homeless, we'd say with the homeless people, oh, yeah, let's get some guns and go out and, I don't know, rob people, shoot people, get money from them with these guns. No, we'd say that's crazy. Okay. But government is the agency based on force. And it's action. It gets money by initiating force. This is taxation. And its regulations are enforced by policemen who will eventually take you to jail if you don't do what they say. So you have to ask, and yes, a whole chapter on this, whether you can expect a good result from an agency that is based on the use of initiation of physical force.
You know, it's interesting when I think of using force to defend our borders, like right now. Okay, I'm in favor of that. I think that is a role of government, but it is the force that they're using. Every level of government, if you don't pay your taxes or license your dog, or, I mean, the expanding areas of regulation and force where the government at every level can come down on you and take things away from you, take away your property, take away your dog, take away your freedom is astounding. I'm going to pick 400 years ago, you know, the king could chop off your head, but really you could probably get far enough away and send some gold to him every now and then and you could live your life. Am I wrong? It just seems like they're in every detail of my life now. They even tell me how much water I can have to flush my toilet. It's like astounding to me, Jim.
Yeah, okay. Well, whoever, we've got to separate things because there would be a water-providing agency. Okay, that would in certain situations ask you to use, but it might have nothing to do with government. Just like here, you would tell me how to do this interview and to stop talking or whatever. So there's a lot of voluntary regulation of behavior that is normal and necessary. But going back to your point about borders, the line you draw is between the initiation of force and the defensive use of force.
Mm.
And the justification, we're getting, by the way, into the libertarians, they're a rather small number of people, but that's what this position is here, that the libertarians will say the initiation of force, that is, you're being peaceful, you're walking down the street, and I draw out a gun and say, give me money, I'm initiating force. But if you're breaking into my house and I draw out a gun and say, don't come in, now I'm defending, I'm the defensive use of force. So that government is, libertarians would say, justifiable to defend against these would-be foreign invaders. And foreign, they're invaders if they're pushing across your border, you know, jumping over fences. It's just like jumping into your house. So that those are basic functions of government, the defense, military defense, and defense of borders that you would have. It's the initiation of force, which is taxation, I'm afraid, and all the regulations are, without people even thinking twice about them, that are defended by the initiation of force, that would be questionable.
Do you think that more and more people are understanding and even embracing a more libertarian approach, as they understand all the inroads of force in government and coming at us, that people are now really beginning to see there needs to be that pushback?
Some people. I have several chapters on this in this book, that to begin to question government, this is a very recent thing. And I identify, he was a philosopher, English philosopher, in 1793. That's after our Revolutionary War, that the first book came out, where he questions government because of its use, initiation of force. That's the first one in history. You go back further, nobody ever did this. Okay? And then you have to go to about the mid-19th century. Henry David Thoreau, by the way, is one of them. But there were 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 writers in the mid-19th century that are the early libertarians that questioned government because of its basis in force.
So when you say question government, it's a more fundamental question going on rather than just, well, I don't like that program or I don't like that tax and I'm going to criticize and I'm going to vote for candidate A because he's saying this and candidate B, he's all, you know. So it's a more fundamental issue with government.
And that's what this book really does, is it tries to put libertarianism on the map of saying they are really the people that are going lower than criticism of this particular candidate or I hate Trump or stuff like that.
Exactly.
And saying the whole thing, regardless of who's in charge of it, has to be questioned. And that is obviously growing. There was one libertarian in 1793, and there were probably about 15 in 1850. And now there are, I think, a couple million in a Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much minority, only 2 or 3%. And most people say, I'm
They're
a little afraid
split
of that.
The vote.
it tends to split the vote and so forth, but that's what it is.
Well, you have one more chapter I want to get to, and then we're going to spend the whole last segment on transcending big government. I love the title of your appendix, Avenues of Reform. But you've got this Latin phrase that I'll probably mess up here. Post hoc ergo propter hoc, which is a
good
fallacy.
For you.
Thank
My you. Goodness.
Thank you, Professor. So explain to our audience what that is and how that so directly relates to our misperceptions about government.
Well, it's a Latin phrase for a logical fallacy that's very old and ancient. It means after this, therefore because of this. In other words, what you're doing is you're pointing to something and calling it the cause, whereas it's just going along with it. And the classic example is the rooster is crowing, and you say, oh, the rooster made the sun rise, because the rooster's crowing comes along with the sunrise. And actually, the Vanderfort's bookstore had a lovely sign out there, which was that, in fact, maybe you can read it there.
The dinosaurs didn't read, and look what happened to them.
Okay, that's a beautiful example of that post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy. Well, it happens in government or in justifying government is you once you have the faith in government, then you use it to account for everything. It's a post hoc thing. So you'd say, for example, I give an example of someone in England who credits the National Health Service, government's hospitals and health service, for the increasing age.
Life expectancy.
Yeah, life expectancy. You point to that, and he doesn't notice that in the United States we didn't have an NHS and life expectancy increased. So it's pointing to a program and saying, oh, it explains all the good that's happening. And I give some example of these are very thoughtful people, and Elizabeth Warren is in there among others that use that, and it crops up all the time, and it's a sign of the power of the faith in government that you commit this logical fallacy.
You've got here, and I'll just read it, you know, government has programs intended to help people and regulate economic life. In other words, let's just say help the poor. So the country is now, as America is, wealthier, and poverty is, to a certain extent, less today. Therefore, government programs have created this prosperity and given us the good life. And that's why academics can say big business is bad, capitalism is evil, because they are not giving them any credit for any of the economic progress and fight and help in poverty and giving it all to government, completely misplaced.
Right.
Have I carried that too far?
Well, a little far. Like, for instance, but even if you take big business, it's a good example, because one of the things that government is trusted to do is to regulate big business and keep it from being a bad monopoly, and this goes back 100 years. But what people don't realize is that, on the one hand, a lot of the government intrusions help those monopolies.
And, oh, totally, yeah.
But the other thing
and
is...
And the businesses help them by giving them loads of money
well,
and lobbyists.
Right.
It's just a...
And the other aspect with getting into the propter hoc stuff is that if you did not have government, there would be other evolutions that would take place. Among other things, if people got to hate a particular business, they would stop buying from it, like Amazon. I refuse to buy from Amazon. Even if it costs twice as much in the local store, I go to the local store. So if you really get mad enough or angry and so forth, there will be adjustments and other types of business. Anyway, there are lots of other adjustments that you don't know about and don't think about. Here.
So we just kind of blindly say, okay, it's good. Government was kind of running along with them. So we're going to give government the credit and feed that faith, that misplaced faith, that asleep faith. I can't believe the time is scampering away. We got to take a break. When we come back, everybody, we're going to get to some of the solutions, some of the evolutionary things that need to happen to begin to turn this around.
Planning to ride waves behind your boat this summer? Remember to respect shoreline homeowners and other boaters and mind your wake. Stay at least 200 feet away from the shoreline and docks. Keep tunes at a reasonable level. Homeowners can hear loud and clear just 80 feet away. Limit repetitive passes. Run the same line for a while, then move to a new part of the shoreline. Remember, mind your wake and have a great summer. A message from the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation.
Join VCA North Idaho Animal Hospital and Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust for free family-friendly events. On July 21st at North Idaho Animal Hospital on Ella in Sandpoint, join us for a community dog walk from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Then on July 25th at the Pine Street Woods from 4 to 5:30, learn about the trails, creepy crawlies, and your pets, like disease-carrying ticks, mosquitoes, fleas, and more. For more information, call North Idaho Animal Hospital.
We are here with Shane Flory from North Idaho Collision Repair Center in Bonners Ferry, answering your questions about insurance steering. So what is insurance company steering?
Insurance company steering happens when you pick up the phone to report a claim and the insurance company recommends shops on their list. What people don't know is that these shops have signed contracts with the insurance company to fix that car for a lesser rate. At North Idaho Collision, we really are different. Although we have a great working relationship with all insurance companies, we will not sign insurance company contracts which can defer us from making the proper repairs to your vehicle. We are your advocate for quality repairs.
So what if my insurance company tells me that I have to go to one of their preferred shops?
It is always your choice where you take your vehicle for repairs, and it's illegal for the insurance company to tell you different. So if you have a shop that you're comfortable with, it's always your choice to take it there.
For more information on insurance steering and North Idaho Collision Repair Center, visit them online at nicrepaircenter.com.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
KBFI 1450, KSPT 1400, and 97.1 FM.
All right, everyone, welcome in. We are discussing the book, The Big Government We Love to Hate, by author Jim Payne. And this book is available locally at Vanderfoot's. And I was going to say it was on Amazon, but I take that back. It's available locally.
It's also available from the publisher.
Oh, and directly from the
publisher.
Oh, yeah,
there's a website, Litton Publishing.
All right. Excellent. So I want to just give every candidate from now on, Jim, that I'm going to interview on this program. I like to interview candidates for public office. And if they want to know what I'm going to ask them and kind of almost in what order, they need to read your appendix, because I'm going to talk to them first about what, you know, where they are on whatever issue with individual rights. And then what about the cost-benefit analysis? And then what about economic pressures if they do this or do that or support this? And then I'm going to get them really going when I say, and oh, yeah, does this have anything to do with common sense and decentralization and restraints on force? I love it. You have given me my interviews for at least another year candidates. Thank you. So let's talk about these avenues of reform and evolution that you have here. And you've got a quote. Let me just take a minute and read it. You say here, the big government of today is not likely to be wound down in an orderly, efficient way. In the future, we are likely to experience some painful crises, deadlocks, and disasters. But we will come to realize that these failures will not be blank and hopeless. But alternative systems will emerge in unexpected ways in the midst of the confusion. I like that. There is hope, isn't there?
Yes. Oh, I think there's always hope. Yes.
Yeah. So what are some of these avenues of reform that you want to emphasize?
Well, they've been happening for actually several hundred years. And as you say, the first one there is the idea of rights. If you go back, 500 or more years, citizens are seen as almost slaves of the ruler. In fact, the word subjects, mm-hmm. The king's subjects. So basically they should do whatever he tells them to do and suffer whatever he tells them to suffer. And we moved past that and got interested in the individuals there, the subjects, and got sympathy for them and so forth, and started feeling they had rights. and a lot of the, like the right to speech, which we now take as obvious, didn't exist. Oh, if you said the king is a jerk, they killed you right away.
Well, I think that some of that's coming back. The right to speak out on campuses is...
No, not that. Well, be careful with the... it's the use of force, okay, to implement this. If there are other agencies, like on your... this program, if you say, Jim, you can't say that, that's your program. You're not using force against me.
Okay.
So even if you have schools, universities, they want to say, we're going to teach this, not that, you're going to believe this or that. Those are all private organizations can have whatever requirements they want. That is not a use of force, government's use of force. People are getting a little confused about
that. Thank you for clarifying that, because that is different when you think about it in that light.
And what we really want is just a lot more decentralization. And yes, you have groups that will have their views, and that's fine. And if you don't like them, leave them, and so forth.
People are afraid of decentralization. Why is that, do you think? Some people are afraid of it.
I don't know. I'm not, but that's what I preach. I would turn it around. I would say one of the many ingredients for the worship or faith in government is a kind of belief in centralization, of this is a big, far-off bigness appeals to us. If we see a big building, you know, a corporation in a big building, we say, oh, they must know what they're doing. Whereas if it's a little fellow selling some apples from a cart, you know, we don't, you know, think so much of them. And I think that's a fallacy in our way of thinking, that we should overcome,
One of the answers is, and I just kind of almost laughed and took in a breath when I saw this, is common sense. If we could exercise more common sense, speak to our audience about how that can be an avenue to get through the worst of some of this, change.
I think I've seen it happen. And I'm one of the avenues, I think, is that even people working for government, it's not a us and them kind of thing. They're affected by these. I know government employees, I'm not going to mention their names here, but I know government employees that are libertarians.
Praise God for that.
But anyway, so when they come across a situation where the regulation, they can see it's producing a counterproductive result. Like, say you have some children selling lemonade in front of their house, and it turns out that he will look the other way. So that's one of the many ways that we're going to bend away from. I mean, the regulation will still be there on the books, but it will be less and less enforced. Till this, by the way, is happening in Holland a lot more. That they have their regulation, their rules, laws, like on euthanasia and prostitution and drugs and stuff. The laws are still on the books, but they're being thoughtfully relaxed in their enforcement by the police and prosecutors and so forth.
You know, one of the things, and this is like the opposite, if I can say it that way, of this use of force. And you went all the way back to these books I didn't get a chance to mention, your Princess Naveena books, which I love. And she went and visited the land of Voluntaria. And so I think that one of the solutions is more and more volunteer effort, more and more community effort. And I think Sandpoint, to a very great extent, abounds in this. And we just need to get more of that affecting and implemented in government.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. She gets off the boat and says, where's your government? And to make a long story short, they don't have one. And everything that we expect government to do is, in fact, being taken care of by associations, building bridges, whatever it needs doing.
And you see, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, if 100%, if you could say get into, I don't know, Idaho and say, where's government? Well, there will be a government in Boise and in Sandpoint and Coeur d'Alene, but more and more, if we can have more local control and local volunteerism, is one of your big answers.
Oh, definitely.
All right. Oh, my gosh, we're out of time. I've got Jim, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, Barbara.
All right. Next week, I'm going to have a great guest, so y'all come on back. Until then, this is Barbara saying thanks and God bless you.
KQ46EU, 1450 KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400 KSPT Sandpoint.